'Tis the season once again, and we'll celebrate with a look at A Christmas Carol, The Winter Skies, and a story of General Lee and Santa Claus. Today on With Good Reason, I'm John Blythe.
Marley was dead to begin with. There is no doubt about that. The register of his burial was signed by the clergyman, the clerk, the undertaker, and the chief mourner. Scrooge signed it, and Scrooge's name was good upon change for anything he put his hand to. Old Marley was dead as a doornail. Scrooge knew he was dead. Of course he did. How could it be otherwise? Scrooge and he were partners for I don't know how many years. Scrooge was his sole executor, his sole administrator, his sole assign, his sole residuary legatee, his sole friend and sole mourner. And even Scrooge was not so dreadfully cut up by the sad event, but that he was an excellent man of business on the very day of the funeral, and solemnized it with an undoubted bargain. Scrooge never painted out old Marley's name. There it stood, years afterward, above the warehouse door, Scrooge and Marley. The firm was known as Scrooge and Marley. Sometimes people new to the business called Scrooge Scrooge and sometimes Marley, but he answered to both names. It was all the same to him. Oh, but he was a tight-fisted hand at the grindstone, Scrooge. A squeezing, wrenching, grasping, scraping, clutching, covetous old sinner. Hard and sharp as flint, from which no steel had ever struck out generous fire. Secret and self-contained and solitary as an oyster. The cold within him froze his old features, nipped his pointed nose, shriveled his cheek, stiffened his gait, made his eyes red, his thin lips blue, and spoke out shrewdly in his grating voice. A frosty rime was on his head, and on his eyebrows, and his wiry chin. He carried his own low temperature always about with him. He iced his office in the dog days, and didn't thaw it 1 degree at Christmas.
The opening of Charles Dickens's 1843 classic, A Christmas Carol. It's a story known to many, the transformation of Ebenezer Scrooge from miserly misanthrope to benevolent gentleman. Look just below the surface of Scrooge's encounters with ghosts of Christmases past, present, and future, and you'll find a scathing social commentary on Victorian England. With us today to describe England of Dickens's day and to discuss the writing of A Christmas Carol is Annette Federico. Professor Federico teaches English at James Madison University and specializes in Victorian literature. Annette Federico, for all his efforts to preach benevolence and charity, Dickens also had another motive. Truthfully, didn't he conceive of A Christmas Carol as a way to make a quick shilling or two?
Dickens was extraordinarily involved with this story, both emotionally and politically, but at the same time, he did need to make money. He was 31 in 1843, married. His fifth child was on the way. He was in the middle of the 10th, I think, installment of Martin Chuzzlewit, his sixth novel, which was a ferocious attack on the vice of selfishness. And that book wasn't selling very well. And he had an idea that maybe he could capitalize on the holidays, and he wrote A Christmas Carol very rapidly in a little more than a month. It was published in December, I think the 17th in 1843, and he really wanted to make this an attractive package. He was very, very excited about the idea. He felt instinctively that he had a hit on his hand, and he bore all the expenses, told his publishers that he wanted to make it look special and, you know, sort of in the holiday spirit.
And how did he do that?
It had gold edging and gold lettering. The cover was in Christmas colors of green and red, and especially attractive that there were 8 illustrations by an eminent Victorian illustrator named John Leech, 4 of which were hand-colored. So this attractive little commodity cost 5 shillings, and Dickens, advanced that, hoping that it would be a big hit and he would reap the rewards financially.
And did he?
No, he was disappointed, actually. He sold 6,000 copies between, December 17th and Christmas Eve, which was extraordinary, at that price especially. That's a very high price. I suppose if you want to put that into Victorian terms, Bob Cratchit's salary was 15 shillings a week, so that would be a third of his weekly salary. So Bob Cratchit's family wouldn't be able to buy A Christmas Carol.
Who was buying books at the time?
Dickens' main readers were the middle class, especially at this period in the middle of his career. Eventually, he became so well-known internationally, you know, the most famous man in the 19th century. Even people who couldn't read, who were illiterate, knew the name of Charles Dickens and knew his stories because they would go to the local pub and someone who could read would begin reading one installment of, say, you know, Dombey and Son or David Copperfield. And so people were very aware of Dickens' storytelling ability. And because he wrote so much about his own time, he was very accessible to people even who didn't have much of an education at all.
So you say A Christmas Carol was sort of a moderate success? Or?
It was a great success in terms that it sold 6,000 books in 2 weeks, and it sold even more than that in the months that followed. From January to April, the book just continued to sell and sell in a somewhat cheaper format. Financially, Dickens was somewhat disappointed. He thought that he would make at least £1,000 over the course of a few months, and he only made about £230 in those first 6,000. He actually broke with his publishers because of financial dispute after The Christmas Carol.
Oh, really?
Some new publishers, yes.
And what about the critics? What did they say about the book?
Well, you know how critics are. And throughout his career, critics were concerned that Dickens was, he was too grotesque, he was vulgar, he was cockney. These were the adjectives that were used to describe him. But even with The Christmas Carol, the critics couldn't touch it. Dickens's chief competitor in the literary market, William Makepeace Thackeray, said, "Who can listen to objections regarding such a book as this?" So, and even today, it's not a work that gets a lot of critical attention by academics.
So, I mean, did he receive any criticism at the time for sort of this charitable message, yet trying to make some money?
It wasn't necessarily about his economic motive, but it was about the sort of materialism, I guess, that the Christmas turkey and the plum puddings and the holidays being more secularized by Dickens rather than giving them the kind of Christian message, the religious message that people might have been accustomed to. And he did get critics. One said he Christianizes eating and drinking and contrives to make the stomach in some odd way the organ of the soul. John Ruskin said that for Dickens, Christmas is nothing more than mistletoe and pudding, as if there were no resurrection from the dead and the Star of Bethlehem and all of this. So,
was he accurately portraying Christmases of the time?
Just at the time when Dickens was writing A Christmas Carol in 1843, a man, I think his name was Cole, was inventing the Christmas card. This was also the time when certain traditions were beginning to be established in Great Britain, like Christmas crackers, you know, Christmas trees, Christmas carols. So it was all a matter of transition from a more rural world before the Industrial Revolution to industrial capitalism and a very urban world. You notice that when Ebenezer Scrooge goes back in time, he goes back into the country for those sort of rural traditions. But the Christmas of the present is described emphatically as belonging to London and the urban streets.
So Dickens was working on other books at the same time that he was writing these Christmas stories?
He was actually writing Martin Chuzzlewit. And in his own words, he said he wrote this Christmas story in odd moments of leisure. Because it was such a popular success, he wrote four more stories in the next 4 years, and even had some kind of wording in his contract with his new publishers that he would produce A Christmas Story, so that there was that profit motive, which to us might seem, you know, incongruous or maybe even, sort of has a cynical edge to it, but that really wasn't the case at all. Dickens took his profession with the utmost seriousness and felt that novel writing was a moral enterprise. So even though I'm emphasizing the economic, one of the reasons that he wrote A Christmas Carol was because he had just been to a meeting in October, a general meeting in Manchester, about ragged schools, that is, schools for the very, very poor. And he was completely upset and just deplored the conditions of the poor, and especially the ignorance, which he felt was being neglected. So he really wanted to, as he said, you know, write something that would be a sledgehammer to draw attention to the plight of the urban poor.
What are the names of these other Christmas stories?
The Chimes is the one that came immediately after in 1844. The Cricket on the Hearth in 1845, probably the best loved after A Christmas Carol. And then two sort of odd books that seem more complex than simple Christmas stories, The Battle of Life in 1846 and The Haunted Man in 1848, deeper psychological studies than the previous three, although some have psychoanalyzed Ebenezer Scrooge, because we get his history, we get his past, that he's not just a simple character.
Now, are there similarities between A Christmas Carol and The Chimes or The Cricket on the Hearth?
I think that in terms of the political and social and moral motive, yes, there are similarities. I think The Chimes perhaps isn't as, I don't know, recyclable, I guess, for us, because it's so much rooted in some of the political issues of the time. It's a little bit more topical than I think A Christmas Carol.
Now, are there any records that the folks that Dickens was trying to get the message to actually got the message?
Yes, absolutely. I think that my favorite story is when he started to do his public readings in 1853. These were dramatic readings of his works, and A Christmas Carol was the first reading that he did, was always among the most popular, always included in his repertoire. When he did his American tour, he did a Christmas Carol, probably right around the season, you know, when people were susceptible to it. And according to the story, a Boston industrialist, a capitalist, for the first time gave his workers Christmas Day off and bought them all a Christmas turkey. So I mean, it really did affect
people. One
Scrooge
got the message.
There was one, right. And I recall too an anecdote of the young Robert Louis Stevenson, of course, you know, second generation of Victorians, saying, you know, all right, I, in spite of it all, no matter what they say, I'm giving money away. I'm giving it away. So it definitely got to people.
Did Dickens and Christmas become synonymous in his own lifetime?
Yes, they did. There's a interesting little story. I don't know if this is apocryphal or if this is something that we can actually believe, but supposedly by the time of his death in 1870, his name had become so closely associated with Christmas and the spirit of Christmas that when told that Dickens had died, a little street girl said, "Dickens dead? Then will Father Christmas die too?" Believe it if you want to.
Which one of the stories is your favorite?
A Christmas Carol is my favorite. Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Annette Federico is a professor of English at James Madison University. You're listening to With Good Reason. I'm John Blythe.